Welcome to the Shir Maral Gerarie Parshas Yisro. Parshas Yisro, obviously, there's a lot to talk about. So I just want to focus in on one Rashi and Maharal, which really talks about a concept which I think is very fundamental on many levels. The Pasuk says, Perek Yutesh, Pasuk Yitzayim, Vayose Moshe Ba'om, the Tachlo Elohim and Amachana, Moshe, the people were standing at the foot of Har Sinai. So Moshe Rabbeinu took the people outside of the camp to greet God, so to speak. And they stood literally at the underside of the mountain. What does it mean, Besachtis Sahar? So Rashi writes, the simple interpretation is Beraglei Hahar. The people encamped, they came and they stood at the foot of the mountain. That's the simple interpretation. However, the Pasuk doesn't say that by Yisrael Beraglei Hahar, that they stood at the foot of the mountain. It says that by Yisrael Besachtis Sahar, again, literally they stood under the mountain. Umidrasho, so says Rashi, the Midrashic interpretation is Shiniflash Hahar Menakomo. Their mountain was picked up from its place, the Nichta Aleyem Kegigis, and it was placed on top of the Jewish people like a barrel. Right? So Rashi, that's all that Rashi quotes, but we're probably familiar with the Gemara in Shabbos, Peches, Somaralis, which Rashi is referencing. There the Gemara says that the Ribbono Shel Olam took the mountain, suspended it over the heads of the Jewish people like a barrel, and he said to the Jewish people, "If the Kabbalah Torah Mutov, if you accept the Torah, that's great. The Imlav, but if you're not going to accept the Torah, Shomotei Kuraschem. Right here is going to be where your burial place is going to be, because I'm going to drop the mountain on you, and that's going to be it." So the Jewish people thought about it for all of 6 seconds, looked up, saw the mountain, they said, "I think we're going to accept the Torah." Right? That's the story, the way it's told in the Gemara and Shabbos. So, comments the Maral on this Rashi, and again, the Maral commenting on this Rashi is really ultimately commenting on the Gemara that puts forward this idea. The Perek Rabbi Akiva, in that chapter in the Sefer Shabbos, Tikshuah Tosfos, the Bali Tosfos asked the following question. Right? The Jewish people, again, famously are described by the Gemara as having said, "Nasa v'nishma," we will perform the words of Torah even before we fully learn everything that's in it. Right? That's the famous phrase of the Jewish people, that they committed to Torah sight unseen. Right? They didn't even know what they were getting into, but they committed to it anyway. So if that's the case, how do you fit these two midrashim together? The Jewish people willingly accepted Torah without even, you know, knowing what was in it. And no, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to suspend the mountain over their heads and essentially force them into the acceptance of Torah. On the surface, those two midrashim are polar opposites of one another. Why do you need both? The Tirsulah Tosfos, the Tosfos over there in the Sefer Shabbos answers, the sequence of events in Tosfos is as follows. The people originally said Nasa v'nishma, right? They said that we're committed to Torah no matter what. However, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Right? So, you know, they said we're willing to accept everything. We don't even have to understand everything. But we know, you know, the experience of Maimon Har Sinai was awe-inspiring. There was this huge fire, and the Jewish people literally felt their souls depart them, you know, as they were standing receiving the Torah. So either in anticipation of that, or after that happened, the Ribbono Shel Olam said, "You know what? I'm going to force you to accept the Torah, because perhaps you don't want to go through with it, or you won't want to go through with it, so therefore I'm going to force you to do it, you know, even though willing, originally you were willing, but, you know, maybe you had second thoughts." That's where the suspending of the mountain over their heads came in. So ain't dainty nocha the purish is there. So says the Maral, I'm very unhappy with this answer of the Bali Tosfos.
Why? Lasos calls Chus Yisrael Shiktivu Nasa the Lenishma La Ayin. Shiachsarum is the Chusam Hagadol Shuhula Dori Doros. It's very interesting. The Naral's dissatisfaction with this Tosfos is not based on a technical problem, but it's almost like a gut, visceral reaction, the Naral says. That's the Naral. When the Jewish people said Nasa Venishma, when they said we're going to do it, even though we don't fully understand it, that was one of the biggest chusim, one of the biggest sources of merit that the Jewish people had, and it's a source of merit that stands them for generations and generations afterwards to this day. You're going to tell me, says the Naral, that the Jewish people who had this readiness to commit no matter what would have been frightened away because of a great fire, or they would have been frightened away because their souls departed from them? You're going to take that chus of Nasa V'Nishma away from the Jewish people, Tosus? You're going to say that the Jewish people who were so ready to commit were not really so ready to commit? Can't be. You know, you can't say that the Jewish people's Nasa V'Nishma was somehow so lackluster. Right? It's almost like a visceral reaction the Maral has. It can't be that their Nasa V'Nishma wasn't so real and could somehow be undone by the basis of the things that they saw later on. About Ikar Apirush Acherira Pashut. So let me tell you what I think is the real answer, says the Maral, as to why there's both a Nasa V'Nishma as well as a mountain being suspended over the heads of the Jewish people. Says the Maral, it's not that the Jewish people needed to be forced into keeping Torah. There was no point at which the Jewish people were reluctant at all to accept the Torah. The point of suspending the mountain over the heads of the Jewish people is to tell the Jewish people in a very graphic way that Torah is indispensable. We know that you want to accept Torah, the Ribbono Shel Olam tells the Jewish people. But I want you to understand that it's not just that you're making a choice to accept Torah, and if you would have turned it down, okay. If no, no. I want you to understand that if you were to have failed to accept Torah, you would be burying yourself. So essential is the Torah to your identity as the Jewish people, and so essential is the Torah really to the world itself as a whole. Viodua, it's well known, says the Maral, Kidvarim Hamukrochim Lihios. Things that are indispensable, things that have to be by virtue of necessity, those things which are necessary and indispensable are the most important things because we can't imagine life without them. And existence can't go on without these things being present. And that's why, says the Maral, the Ribbono Shel Olam suspended the mountain over their heads. It's to show the greatness and the incredible importance of the Torah itself. We have to understand that we can't go without the Torah. The Torah is indispensable. The Jewish people would not have reneged on their commitment. But it's important to bring home to the Jewish people that your commitment is not just an extra credit commitment, it's not just extracurricular, it's not just voluntary, it's not just nice, it's not just, a nice fringe benefit or a thrill or something like that. The Torah that you are accepting is essential to the very continuation of the world itself. Had God not suspended the mountain over the head of the Jewish people, right? People would say the Torah is not so essential to the world. After all, some people are like, yeah, we accepted Torah because we wanted to. What if we wouldn't have accepted Torah? Okay, so we would have done something else, you know. Could have been Torah, could have been Mahjong, could have been something. You know, we would have occupied ourselves some other way. No, that's not the way to look at it. You have to see that the Torah is so indispensable to your life that if you were to not accept the Torah, that would be your end.
Right?
Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, before he suspended the mountain over their heads, was trying to entice them to accept the Torah. Right? Because after all, none of my rabbis asked the following question. So why engage in all the back and forth altogether? At the beginning of Perek Yutesh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to convince the Jewish people, you know, I took you out of Mitzrayim, I took you on eagle's wings, you'll be a treasured nation to me from all of the nations. Why do all of that? Why not just cut to the mountain? Look, guys, mountain, you know, I'm going to drop it. Why not just go to that? No, because the point is not to force the Jewish people to keep the Torah. The Rabbi Shalom wants the Jewish people to choose to keep the Torah, but he wants them to choose it with the understanding that there really is no other choice. Right? It's a choice that you have to make. The Kashir Rav, right? When they saw that the Torah was being given by the mountains being suspended over the heads, their reaction was, oh, we see that this wasn't just our choice, but it was something we had to do. There's no way we could exist as a nation without the Torah. That's why the Gemara Shabbos brings a follow-up to Rasha, where the Gemara says as follows. You know, it says in the beginning of Chumash, Vayerevayroker Yom HaShishi. Right, we say it every Friday night in Kiddush. It was evening, it was morning, the sixth day. Not just sixth day, but the sixth day, Yom HaShishi. Hey, you say Lalamali, ask the Gemara, why does it say Yom HaShishi and not Yom Shishi? I mean, all the other days it says Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, Yom Ravi. Why not Yom Shishi? Why Yom HaShishi? The Lamed, so says the Gemara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nice and gracious. God says, this teaches us that the Ribbono Shel Olam made a pact with creation itself. Right? If the Jewish people were not to accept the Torah, the world would be returned to nothingness. What does that have to do with Yom HaShishi? So, again, Rashi brings that the Gemara explains that Yom HaShishi means the sixth day, not the sixth day of creation, the sixth day of Sivan. And basically, all of creation was dependent on Yom HaShishi, on that sixth day of Sivan, which would take place, you know, some close to 2,500 years thereafter. Were it not for the acceptance of the Jewish people of the Torah on the Yom HaShishi, on the sixth day, that sixth day, that so important sixth day, so then none of what had been created in the first parak of Bereishis would have any meaning and everything would be turned back to nothingness. The whole point of that statement is to go hand in hand with the statement of God suspending the mountain over the head of the Jews, is to tell us that although the Jews chose voluntarily to accept the Torah, in a sense, that was really their only choice, the only choice they could have made. Had they chosen otherwise, the world itself would have been undone. They didn't realize that at the time. God wanted them to choose it willingly, right? But he also wanted them to realize in retrospect that the choice they had made was really something that they had no choice to get.
What would
have happened if one of the other nations would have said yes? So, it's interesting. What would have happened if one of the other nations would have said yes? So, my understanding of that Maimar Chazal is not that had the other nations said yes, they would have been the Jews and we would have been Malavim or something like that, but that we would have shared Torah with that other nation. In other words, in theory, had those other nations all said yes, so then we would be in a utopian existence where the entire world would have accepted Torah, and that would have been great. You know, in other words, it wasn't an either or, that either the Jews or the Moabim or the Edomim. It's not like there's only one group that will accept Torah and nobody else, right? That would have been wonderful had, you know, multiple groups of people accepted Torah. Perhaps we still would have been the chosen nation. You know, chosen in that we would have a special relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We would be the Kohanim among the nations. Right? That's the Sfarno, like something like that, you know, in this week's Parsha. Right, meaning, you know, everyone will accept the Torah, just the Jews will have a special status insofar as they'll be spreading Torah to the rest of the nations of the world. But theoretically, had everybody accepted the Torah, or had some of those nations, or one of those nations accepted the Torah, so then they would have worked together with us in, you know, observing the Torah going forward. Now comes the Maharal with a very very interesting interpretation. So the Gemara says in Shabbos that because God forced the Jewish people to accept the Torah, says the Gemara after Shabbos, truth is, we legally have a complaint against HaKadosh Baruch Hu because he made us do it. He made us keep the Torah. Right? We didn't volunteer. It turns out, according to the simple interpretation of Chazal, that God forced us to keep the Torah. So in a sense, we can always tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what do you want from me that I'm not keeping Torah? You made me do it. You forced me. You didn't really give me a choice. Right? And the Gemara says that the only reason that we can really say that we accepted the Torah willingly is that during the days of Ahasuerus, right, after the miracle associated with the Purim story, there the Jews willingly reaffirmed their commitment to Torah, so the only sense in which we can say we really voluntarily accepted the Torah is after the Purim story. Now that line, and those lines in the Gemara, are harder to understand according to the Maharal's interpretation, because the Maharal was saying, in point of fact, there was no coercion. Right? The Jewish people accepted the Torah willingly. He suspended the Torah over their heads. That was not coercion. The Jews had already accepted the Torah. There was no backing out or possibility that they would back out. God was just making a point about the necessity and integral nature of Torah, that the world cannot exist without it. That's the only thing that was represented by suspending the mountain over the head of the Jews. Okay, well that's fine and good, but then what do you do with the continuation of the Gemara that makes it sound like it actually was coercion that, you know, God imposed upon the Jewish people to make them accept the Torah? So the Maharal tries to explain that as follows. Notwithstanding the fact that in reality there was no coercion, the Gemara still quotes the statement of Rava that, you know, because God forced us to do it, we have a complaint, in theory, against God, you know, for making us, you know, forcing us to keep the Torah. Pirush. Shahayim achriach osam l'kabel ha-Torah. Afal gav z'lefiz el-chosru v'nasa v'nishma. You know, even though according to what I'm saying says the Maharal, there was never any time in which the Jews even contemplated reneging on their voluntary commitment to Torah. But nonetheless, at that moment, that critical moment when the Jews accepted Torah, they were coerced. In what sense were they coerced? They were coerced in the sense that they were being told, you don't really have the choice. Right? It's not that they were coerced in the conventional sense of the term, that I don't want to do this. No, you've got to do this, you've got to do this, you've got to do this, you've got to do this. That wasn't the sense in which they were coerced. But they were coerced in a sense intellectually. They chose to accept Torah, and then at the very moment when they're actually accepting the Torah, God tells the Jewish people, by the way, I just want you to realize, you don't really have a choice. You made the right choice, and you made the only choice. So on a certain level, that's not, you know, even though they chose it willingly, it's not really a choice. If you're not really given another option, you can't really describe that as a choice. Okay, so then what does it mean that they accepted the Torah willingly in the days of Ahasuerus, according to this? If you're telling me that the fact that they didn't have a choice, you know, it's not coercion in the simple sense of the term, that they were literally coerced, but rather they just realized that they didn't have a choice, but how did that change when, you know, the events of Purim took place? So explains the Maharal The Ka'amar, the Hagar Kiblu Alein B'mei HaKashveros, the Tzir Kimu V'Kiblu, Pirush, Shahayu Mikablum Alein Mitzvah Achas Mimitzvah HaTzara. Again, the Maral gives a unique interpretation to the Gemara over there. When the Gemara says that they accepted Torah willingly in the days of Achashverosh, what does that mean? So the Gemara relates that statement to a statement in the Megillah, Kimu v'kiblu ayehudim aleim b'alzarom. The Jews accepted upon themselves and their future generations, right, to do what? So in the original context of the Megillah, it means that they accepted upon themselves to keep the laws of Purim. Right? So Chazal understand, well, they accepted upon themselves, Kimu v'ashekiblu kfar, they accepted upon themselves, that was they already, you know, accepted back at Har-Sinai. So comes the Maral, and he gives a very interesting interpretation to that. The simple pshat in the pasuk is that the Jews accepted the laws of Purim. And says the Maral, the truth is that's really what Chazal mean as well. What do you mean? Shahayu mekabel amei mitzvah achas b'mitzvah hatzara, yikriyat ha-megillah, v'afagav de'in kan onus. After the events of Purim, the Jews chose to add an extra mitzvah onto their mitzvahs. What was that extra mitzvah? The mitzvah of reading the Megillah on Purim? They instituted again, it's not really rabbinic, it's sort of quasi-rabbinic, it's divrei Kabbalah. They instituted a prophetic mitzvah to read the Megillah on Purim. Were they coerced by God in any way to add that mitzvah? Not at all. So therefore, the cave of the Hemei Atzmam Hiskimu Lasos Mitzvazos Zel Kabbalas Kala Torah. Since we see that the Jews voluntarily accepted to add on the mitzvah of reading the Megillah, in hindsight we see that they voluntarily accepted the Torah in its entirety. She'ech Yosifu Old Mitzvah Him Harishonim Hayu Mukrachim Aleya. Because it doesn't make sense for the Jews voluntarily to add on an extra mitzvah if they viewed the earlier mitzvahs as being only incumbent upon them because of coercion. Right? In other words, clearly the fact that they were adding a mitzvah that they were going to do meant that they accepted the system in a voluntary fashion. Because if you feel coerced into the system, you certainly wouldn't want to add extra laws into the system that you didn't have to do. That's what Chazal means. It's a beautiful fact of the Maral. There was no active, explicit acceptance of the entire Torah after the events of Purim. The Jews merely instituted this new holiday called Purim with its associated mitzvahs, most notably Kriyas HaMegillah. However, the fact that the Jews did that shows that they lovingly and willingly accepted Torah as being binding upon themselves, because clearly, you know, if they saw the system as something they were forced into, they wouldn't be looking to add extra mitzvahs. So the pshat, which speaks about them only adding Purim, they accepted upon themselves, Kiblu v'kimu ayehudim aleim yalzarom, yos osim eskimea Purim ha'elef. The Jews accepted upon themselves to observe Purim, which is the simple pshat of the pasuk, is really not at odds at all with the way Chazal understands the pasuk, that the Jews accepted the Torah in its entirety upon themselves at that time. To just paraphrase the Maral, and then we'll break the Maral and continue a little bit afterwards, but I think the Maral is saying over here is as follows. There was no real coercion. Right? Again, that's the point the Maral is saying. The Jews, at every point along the way, voluntarily accepted Torah. However, there was a perception of coercion. Since God revealed to the Jews at the last moment, you know, there only was really one choice, there's a certain perception of coercion. Even the perception of coercion disappeared after the Jews said, following the events of Purim, not only do we want to observe the Torah, but we even want to add on to the laws of the Torah. We love the Torah so much, we want to add on extra mitzvahs. And that showed in retrospect that there wasn't even the appearance of coercion. with regard to what the Jews had accepted upon themselves. That's what changed. People became Alayim during the days of Ahasuerus. That's what we'll pick up after Maimonides. Welcome to the second part of the Shir Maral Gurariyeh Parshas Yisrael. So we saw the Maral offers his own explanation to resolve the seeming contradiction between the two statements in the Gemara Sefer Shabbos. On the one hand, the Jews accepted the Torah willingly, nasa v'nishma. On the other hand, kafalein ha'kigigis, God forced the Jewish people to accept the Torah by basically suspending the mountain over their heads. Says the Maral, the Jewish people voluntarily accepted Torah, and they never backed off from that voluntary acceptance. And what was the purpose, therefore, of suspending the mountain over their heads? Says the Maral, the point was not to coerce the Jews, but rather to make a point to the Jews about the essential nature of Torah. If you, the Jewish people, do not continue with Torah, or if you would not have accepted the Torah, that would have brought the universe to an end. So, it's a communication about the value of Torah, but at the same time, it's not really coercion because, the Jewish people were not coerced. They chose the Torah. They at no time ever indicated that they did not want to accept the Torah. The Maral goes on to explain that when the Gemara says in Shabbos that from the fact that the Torah was coerced is a complaint that the Jews could potentially have. So, what does that mean? They weren't coerced. So it says, explains the Maral. What that means is that nonetheless, when they accepted Torah, they realized that there really was no other choice. So in a sense, there's the appearance of coercion. However, when the Jewish people experienced the events of Purim, then they accepted the Torah willingly. What does it mean that they accepted the Torah willingly? So here's where the Maral offers his own interpretation. By enacting the laws of Purim and the reading of the Megillah, which the Jews voluntarily accepted upon themselves, they didn't have to do that. They showed that voluntarily they were committed to the whole system of Torah. They're so committed to the system of Torah that they're even willing to accept upon themselves additional mitzvahs above and beyond the basic 613 mitzvahs of the Torah itself. That willingness to accept additional mitzvahs reflects that their acceptance of Torah as a whole is something which is done voluntarily, it's not out of coercion, and it dispels even the appearance of coercion, which might be there. Right, so I think what the Maral was saying is that the Jews didn't just make up a holiday. They cast that holiday in the rubric of Torah. In other words, they cast this as a mitzvah which they had to do as being an extension of all of the mitzvahs of Torah which they were already obligated in. And it wasn't just, it wasn't just like they made up July 4th, Memorial Day, we'll sell firecrackers or something like that. They cast it as a mitzvah. So to the extent to which they cast it as a mitzvah, that shows that they were accepting the system of mitzvahs and Torah as a whole. So the Maral continues on that point. He says as follows: Says the Maral. Wait a minute. But Megillas Esther itself was a divine revelation. What do you mean the Jews accepted reading the Megillah? They accepted the laws of Purim. To some extent, this was also a prophetic revelation that was made to the Jewish people. Perusha, what that means to say, is the Beruach HaKodesh Nemra, that Megillas Esther was said through prophetic inspiration, Shehu Yitzvarach Maskim Ayudei Kabbalasa. The Jews accepted to celebrate Purim, they accepted to read Megillas Esther, and God signed off on their acceptance. In that sense, Megillas Esther was said through prophecy. Because the Jews accepted Purim, so God said, okay, I agree as well.
But the impetus to accept Purim and the Megillah started with the Jews. God did not command it whatsoever. It was the Jews who, as a grassroots movement, started the idea of observing Purim and reading the Megillah. God came around afterwards and he said, you know what, that's a good idea. I agree. Right? But it comes, the impetus starts from the Jews. V'chein don ha'chasam. And we find that Chazal say exactly that in interpreting the very pasuk which speaks about the Jews accepting the Torah. Kimu v'kiblu. Kimu l'mala, mashi kiblu l'mata. Say Chazal, in heaven, they accepted that which the Jews had accepted down here on earth. Nimso ki ashala sa mitzvah hu b'yodom hoya. We see that the mitzvah began with the Jews, and God just gave the stamp of approval afterwards. It's a similar idea. In other words, they started, they were the impetus, and then God agreed. Well, the Medrash Rus, Kibul Dvar Masu Bezdin Shomata Miskimuan Bezdin Shomala, he quotes the Medrash that says there were three things that were initiated by the Jews down here, you know, the Bezdin of, you know, of earth, the earthly Bezdin, and the heavenly Bezdin agreed to them. Sheila Shalom B'Shem, right, that we use God's name when we inquire after someone's welfare, right, that was instituted by Boaz, it says, you know, Hashem Imochem, God should be with you. Umegillat Esther, and the acceptance of Megillat Esther. Umaisus, right, and the idea that Maiser was taken away from the Levim and given to the Kohanim, which again was true at a certain point in time, as described by the book of Ezra. These were three enactments made down here on earth which were agreed to by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's interesting, he doesn't mention that, maybe because the three things that he mentions over here are all in Tanakh. In other words, they're all Divrei Kabbalah, right? And Hanukkah was a later edition that was made by the rabbis even after the time of the Tanakh, so maybe that's the distinction. So the Kashif Kibbu Aleh Megillat Esther, Shigam Megillat Esther, Makosu Koshu Darshu Zal, Hayu Hei Mekabu Esatar Midatam. Right, and when they accepted Megillat Esther as being part of the Tanakh and Purim being incumbent upon them, implicitly they were accepting the rest of the Torah itself. Then he adds the following: Ufi Medrash Mapsasi. I found the following statement in the Medrash. Rabbi Hartman, in his comments on the Maharal, writes that we don't have this Medrash at all. Even Rabbi Nachum Kasher, who put together the Torah Shleimot, this, you know, comprehensive compendium of Midrashim, that, you know, many of which were not the standard Midrashim, even Rabbi Kasher can't locate this Medrash. So the Maharal found this Medrash, but apparently it's gotten lost since then, because we're not sure exactly where this Medrash is, but it's an incredible Medrash. Kivon Shabbat Kodesh Baruch Hu Litzei HaTorah LeYisrael, but it came time for God to give the Torah to the Jewish people, Kavaleim Harki Gigas. Right, as said before, he suspended the mountain like a barrel over the head of the Jewish people. Ad Shehoyu Anusin L'Kavo Briso Shabbat Kodesh Baruch Hu. Until the Jewish people were coerced, they were forced to accept the covenant of Hashem. Right? This sounds on the surface not like what the Maharal just explained before. Here it uses the word hanusim, coerced, explicitly, but the Medrash continues. Uksiv esel ones, and we know that the Torah says that if a man coerces a woman to be intimate with him, right, he rapes her. It says, "V'lo siel isha, lo yuchal l'shalcha kol yomav." The man has to marry this woman. He's never allowed to divorce her. Again, in 2018, it's hard for us to understand that, right? We start thinking about hashtags and all that kind of stuff, right? You know, he rapes her and therefore he has to marry her. Whoa, that doesn't make any sense. No, so you have to understand it in the context of the ancient world, where a woman who was raped was in a situation where nobody would want to marry her, and she'd be left, you know, without protection. She'd be left, you know, basically bereft. So, you know, the Torah tells the rapist, you have to marry this woman because, well, if she agrees, right, in other words, she can say no, but the impression you kind of get from the Chumash is that the average woman probably would have agreed. Again, it was a different culture than what we have today. But in order to protect the woman, to give her security where nobody else is going to marry her, so the rapist is forced to marry this woman and never divorce her. He took away her security, now he has to provide her with the security that he took away from her. Says the Medrash, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu, coerced the Jewish people, you know what that means? Uvazesh Shehoi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ma'ane Sosam. Because God coerced the Jewish people to accepting the Torah, Nisharu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Jewish people are now married to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ashlo Yuchal L'Shaleach Osam Le'olam, such that God never has the ability to divorce the Jewish people at any future time. He's, so to speak, like that rapist who's being described in the Chumash as being obligated to now be with this woman forever and never divorce her. So too, the Kafalem HaRkigigis was a way of not ensuring that the Jews would accept the Torah. It was a way, as it were, of ensuring that God would never send away the Jews. Fascinating message. Right, so he never promised us Eretz Yisrael forever, right? But
that's his home.
What's that?
If only Mahanes can't send you out of his home, how will he send you out of
his home? Well, he can't divorce, right? But
he can't send you out of his home.
In other words, l'shalcha means to give a guest, right? He can never give a guest. Right? Yeah, you know, but l'shaleach in biblical Hebrew, you know, in this context means, he can't be megarish, so he can't divorce her. So, whatever happens, but we are never not God's people. We will always be God's people. There's no sense that we're not going to be the chosen people. And all of that goes back to Kafalem HaKigigis. Gam Medrash Zen Nifla Nirbaz Bo Ha'onas Hazeh. Right? So, says the Maral, this Medrash fits in with my reinterpretation of the idea of coercion in the, in Chazal. Right? Not coercion to coerce the Jews to do something they didn't want to do, but the coercion takes on a different shade to it. Clearly God is not being compared to a rapist. Right? I mean, clearly that's not a comparison that anybody wants to make. Why did the Torah insist that the rapist has to marry this woman if she so desires and can never divorce her? Right? It's because of what this person did, this is an appropriate response. In life in general, says the Maharal, something which is accomplished through force has more long-lasting implications. It's not, we gave an explanation before, I think more of a social explanation, right? It's fair that because the rapist took away this woman's security, that he should have to provide for this woman's security. But I was saying there's a certain existential truth to it as well. Something which is brought about forcibly sometimes has more long-lasting effects. Right? In a certain sense, that's true of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's relationship with the Jewish people. Had the nature of the connection between God and the Jewish people just been voluntary? In other words, the Jews volunteered to keep the Torah. So, volunteers are great. If you know anything about community life, right, if you want something done, you have to pay money for it. Right? You ask them, We have a very important project. We're looking for volunteers. Watch everyone duck under the table. Or even if they volunteer, you know, okay, so how much can you ask from volunteers? If you're serious about a project, there has to be a certain degree of coercion, quote unquote, coercion in this context meaning that there's a certain sense of obligation. Obligation is probably a better word than coercion. You know, if I want you to do a job and I really want the job done, I hire you to do the job. I don't ask you to volunteer to do the job. So too, the Ribbono Shel Olam and Klal Yisrael. I want you to keep the Torah. Okay, we'll volunteer to keep the Torah. No. I'm hiring you to keep the Torah. I'm coercing you to keep the Torah. I'm obligating you to keep the Torah. That's the message, that's the maral of Kaf Alem Har Kegigis. Even though the Jews had voluntarily accepted Torah, the main way to keep that connection going between God, the Torah, and the Jewish people is to introduce a sense of obligation. And that's how, through Kaf Alem Har Kegigis, there's going to be that sense of obligation of Varnem, Manim, Heim, Elu. These are faithful and true words, you know, to understand the point of that coercion. So this seems to be a slightly different interpretation than what the Maral had given earlier. Earlier the Maral said, but I think ultimately they all fit together. Earlier the Maral had said, the point of suspending the mountain over the head of the Jewish people was to tell them Torah is indispensable. Now, the Maral is saying, the point of suspending the mountain over the head of the Jewish people, even though the Jews have voluntarily accepted Torah, is to tell them that Torah is not just something you volunteer to do, it's an obligation. Volunteerism is wonderful, but, you know, in the end of the day, it only goes so far. If you really want something done, you have to cultivate a sense of obligation. Again, in the professional world, we pay people, right? In the world of Yiddishkeit, you suspend mountains over people's heads to create that sense of obligation. You're not just doing this because it's nice. You're not just doing this because you want to do it. You're doing this because you have to do it. And there's something very powerful about that, says the Maral, which was important to impart to the Jewish people, even though they had already voluntarily accepted Torah and they were not backing away from it in any way whatsoever. Okay, we'll pick up this Hashem next week with Parshas Mishpatim, same time approximately before 3 minutes on 9 minutes.